Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to take a look at the appearance of Venus as an evening star, as Venus is also making a trine to Uranus. So Venus is currently in the sign of Capricorn, making a trine to Uranus in the sign of Taurus, as she also appears as the morning star right at the time of the winter solstice. What a beautiful series of events, celestial omens that we have to look at this week. Today, what I want to do is tell you a little bit about my own kind of my own personal journey with Venus and Uranus in the past year. Uranus has been squaring my natal Venus, and it's played a big role in my life in the past year. So just a couple of thoughts that I have about that transit and what Venus and Uranus are like together. And then we're going to look at five radical ideas to entertain on behalf of Venus. Now, radical because Venus is trine to Uranus right now, so I try to have some fun with this. I also wrote something today that I'm going to read to you that I called a love song for Venus appearing as the evening star. So I'm going to read that, and then after I read it, I'm going to propose five radical ideas we can entertain on behalf of Venus. So kind of a little bit of storytelling today and some creative writing. Like, I just got really creative with this episode, which felt appropriate for Venus trine Uranus, which I think is one of the more creative combinations. Like, Venus Uranus is often associated with people doing really kind of radical creative things, and I felt inspired. So anyway, that's what we're going to do today, and hopefully give you some insights as this transit comes through this week. Don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments, click the notification bell for updates if you want to know when I'm going live. I think I'm going to do a live cast or two this week or next week. So if you want to get notifications, click on that little bell after you subscribe. If you ever want, you can find a transcript of my daily talks on my website, which is nightlightastrology.com. Also, we are trying to raise the support of 1,608 backers right now. As at the time that I'm making this, we are at 710. And we have just 12 days left to go. So we have a big push that we need to accomplish with 12 days left in the calendar year. The Kickstarter goes until New Year's Eve at midnight. You can find a link in the description of this video or the comment section below if you want to pop over to the Kickstarter and donate $5, $10, $1. It all really helps. Helps us to meet our goals. Every day, there's about 4 to 6 hours worth of a process that goes into this. I spend time in prayer, meditation, getting my body and mind right before I sit down and write whatever talk I'm going to do for the day. Then we have a team of people that polish it, put the transcript on the website, get it out all over social media, my newsletter, and so forth. And so when you're supporting this channel, you're supporting a lot of work that goes in 5 days a week to creating this free content for thousands and thousands of people. So we really deeply appreciate your support. You're also helping us meet one of our big goals for 2023, which is to launch an affordable reading service for people so that people who are struggling financially can get a reading at a really reasonable rate. And that will also give an opportunity for people who have graduated from my program and need to get experience reading professionally can have that opportunity and make a little bit of money too. So it's a really great project that we're working on. You're supporting that, supporting this channel and all the good work that goes into it. When you donate, you can choose a reward. The reward could be 50% off any of my online classes, which is the best deal that I have all year round. We also have a 4-class pass. I have 6 different classes you can take, and some of them change and we add classes every year and stuff like that. I have 6 classes that you can take. You can get a 4-class pass, which takes the classes down to almost 75% off. I think there's about 9 of those left. So grab one of those bundles if you want and save a whole bunch. You can redeem those whenever you want. Any of the class passes that you buy through the Kickstarter, you can redeem whenever you want. All my classes are online via webinars, but they're all recorded, so you can do them at your own pace. If you want to check those out, you can head over to the website, nightlightastrology.com, to learn about all the different courses I offer. But take advantage of it. It's a great deal. You're helping some great causes. Whatever you're able to donate, we really appreciate. And thank you so much to everybody who already has donated, the 710 people as of right now that have pitched in. We still have, you know, about 900 left to go. So we need a lot of help here in the last push of just about 12 days left to go. So thank you, everybody. And now let's get into Venus appearing as an evening star, which is a really exciting transit to be looking at. So, you know, like I said, I have a little bit of personal experience with Venus and Uranus in the past year, as Venus in Uranus has been squaring my ascendant ruler, Uranus transiting has been square to Venus. I was born Taurus risings and I have Venus in Leo. So the Uranus transit has been square to Venus in my natal chart. Almost exactly. I still have three passes left of it to go, I think it is, something like that. So I've had a lot of the changes in my life, the personal changes, the most personal changes I've gone through in a very long time, in fact, have come through that transit. There's been some other transits too. So I have a few like just thoughts that I want to share as I've been in the midst of a Venus-Uranus dynamic, but then we'll zoom out and look at it sort of archetypally. And I'll ask you guys to consider five different radical ideas on behalf of Venus today. After I also read you something that I wrote, kind of a creative, I don't know what it is, just almost like a song that I wrote, or don't worry, I'm not going to sing. I won't torture you guys, but I wrote something. I do have an MFA, but I promise nothing in the way of quality here. But anyway, so I'll read that to you guys and then ask you to entertain five radical ideas on behalf of Venus and Uranus, rising as she is as the evening star. All right, let's take a look at the real time clock. So first of all, here's Venus right now in the sky. And you can note the difference there that Venus has with the sun, which is about 15 degrees. So right around that 15 degree mark on average is when you see Venus rising. Now, I was looking at NASA's website and they said you should be able to see Venus right around, I think it was the 22nd or 23rd of December, that she's making her appearance in the evening sky. Now, I think that was a NASA website that I was looking at. But anyway, that was one website. So it's this week. And the official first day appearance would probably be, yeah, it's right about, see how they're about 15 degrees apart on the 22nd? That would be Thursday of this week. So Thursday into Friday. What's so interesting about this is that what's happening as she makes her appearance, fantastic. Look at this. Venus moving into the trine with Uranus and Taurus. Now, Uranus and Taurus is in Venus's sign. So there's a lot of very powerful Venus energy in the air this week. Now, yesterday we talked about the fact that the solstice energy is also super powerful. The sun crossing zero Capricorn, squaring Jupiter, who's entering into Aries again at the zero Aries degree. So like, wow, big week. But it is a week that is also headlined by brilliant Venus appearing in the evening sky with a trine to Uranus, who's a god, a planet often associated with the mythology of Prometheus, the bringer of light and heat, a savior of humankind. Anyway, there's lots of stories about Prometheus, but to me, this is like a particularly intense appearance of Venus as it's happening around the zero Aries, Jupiter ingressing into the zero Aries, winter solstice, and a trine to Uranus. So when will you be feeling this? I would safely say like the transit comes through between Venus and Uranus on Wednesday, December 21st to Thursday, December 22nd. But you should be feeling the appearance of Venus coming off from that trine to Uranus, given the Jupiter Sun square, all the way through Christmas. If you're if you celebrate Christmas, that'll be a bit of an interesting signature to have around on Christmas Day. But it's really sort of coming through, especially on Thursday through Saturday, I would say. That feels like the biggest sort of surge of Venus-Uranus energy. Okay, so with that in mind, I want to tell you a little bit about what my experience has been like. And this is like idiosyncratic. I'm not saying that everyone would necessarily experience the same thing. It's unique to, I guess, my karma and my lifetime. But, you know, as a native of Venus, right, she's the ruler of the helm in my chart. So the helm was the name that was given to the ascendant. The helm is an English translation of the Greek word that basically means like the steering wheel of the ship. Or like the almost like the rudder, the thing that's navigating. So Mercury was said to rejoice in the first house, as Mercury is the planet of navigation and the guide of souls. Now, you could also say that planets in your first house, or the ruler of your first house, is sort of like the navigator of your ship. So Venus is the navigator of my ship. However, I was born in a nighttime chart. In ancient astrology, pay a lot of attention to whether you were born during the daytime or the nighttime. I was born in a nighttime chart with the moon in Capricorn in the ninth house. So I grew up in a religious environment, and I wouldn't say that there was like a strong, cruel, heavy-handed degrading of the feminine or the body, but there was a deep suspicion of it. You know, like, you should be suspicious of the body. You should be suspicious of this world. The trappings and desires of this world are fleeting and temporary. You know, things to be overcome. You know, it was a path of transcendence, you know, in the Christian environment that I was raised in, and one that was always calling into question the flesh. You know, that's just a simple way of putting it. And if any of you were raised in the Christian church, even if I would say so many things that I was raised with in the church were very, very beneficial for me. For example, devotion, devotion to family, to my kids, to my wife, to living like a moral and virtuous path, to being of service to others. So many good things that were cultivated, right? But there's a trade-off too. There's shadows. And I think that's true in like any religious or spiritual tradition, any family for that matter, right? And sometimes, you know, you get a lot more worse than good or good than bad or whatever. But in my upbringing, just the culture or the environment, and not necessarily anything overt as much as it was a subtle undercurrent, there was a sense that what anything that is beautiful should be in service of or an adornment to something that is transcendental. Okay. In other words, if you're going to make art, it should be like I had a lot of youth ministers, for example, when I grew up, like the youth preachers in my, or the kids, youth pastors. And I grew up hearing them say, like, you should, you know, be careful of how much secular music you're listening to, like try to take in like, you know, more Christian music, for example. Now, my parents didn't really care about that. They didn't like preach that to me, but it was things like that. If that makes sense, like you should be cautious and careful of the world. And, at different times in my life, I'm just trying to summarize this briefly so you can understand the impact that Uranus squaring Venus has had on me. And then hopefully we'll jump from there into the next part of today's talk. But any time in my life that I've gone through a struggle, it's usually been a time when things got really polarized. Like, for example, after I went to a Christian school, and then after that I was a youth pastor. And after I started realizing that, you know, I didn't have like a healthy or balanced relationship with being in the world. Like, I was young, I was in my early 20s, and basically I just wanted to get into like a little bit of the drug, sex, and rock and roll. Like, I wanted to go have fun, you know? And I found myself fighting so intensely with that impulse and thinking, well, this is bad. It's leading your faith or your spiritual path, you're being led astray, you know? And then finally I was like, I can't repress this. This is like, it's going to get worse if I repress it because then I'm living this double life. So I left the youth ministry to try to honor and explore that part of me and try to do it in a healthy way, right? Try to find some kind of middle ground. And I realized like, it was just too much to take on the mantle of like, you know, being in a clergy, right? It was like, no, you know, well, unfortunately, then I went off the deep end completely and, you know, found myself dealing with opiate addiction. And then to sort of counterbalance that, I got into ayahuasca shamanism, which helped me to get sober and put me back on a spiritual path, but started basically the ayahuasca in the like world of the wisdom of indigenous shamanism from South America was really helpful in sort of recalibrating the relationship between sort of worldly things and spiritual things. It sort of was like bringing them more closely together. And it was a very extremely positive thing that happened in my life. But the same pattern would repeat itself at different stages when I felt like, you know, I was veering too far into maybe patterns of desire, things that I was invested in that were maybe pulling me out of the spiritual practices or habits that were keeping me sane and well, then I would course correct really strongly in the opposite direction. I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about. I feel like this is very human. You know, I'm not trying to make myself out to be someone special. Like, I think everyone does this to a certain extent. So I sort of course correct extremely heavy in the opposite direction. And this pattern would like happen again and again. So the most recent version of that was when I became a dad. I felt like I really needed to like get my shit together, because I found becoming a dad to be extremely difficult. And mostly in the first couple of years, because our daughter had extreme colic for like the first year. So like 60 to 70% of the time that she was awake, she was screaming for like the first year of her life. And I thought I was going insane. What to speak of my wife, who is, to me, like, she's a soldier. she's 3 planets in Aries. She was stressed too, though. I mean, but anyway, I got back into therapy during that time with a Jungian, and I'm still working with that same therapist, and that's been amazing. But I also got really deeply immersed in bhakti yoga, and then took sort of monastic vows and initiation. And that was, again, like falling in the same pattern of being like, something about the world and the realities of the world and the kind of material energies, right? They're pulling me so hard in this direction, and I'm trying to cope, but I feel like I'm getting pulled out of my center. So course correct to a really extreme sort of spiritual level of focus and vows and a lot of like material restrictions, so to speak. So there's been a back and forth like that for me throughout my lifetime. And every time I go through it, it's like, I recognize that I'm going through it. You know what I mean? And you recognize the pattern. But you feel like you don't know how to change the pattern. You feel like you're just in it. And maybe you guys know what I'm talking about, but it's like a totally different pattern. But you know, there's these patterns, and it's like, they play out over long periods of your life, and you see them and you're like, yeah, I'm in it again. You know, here it is. But you feel kind of helpless to change it, until for me anyway, I'd say one of the biggest breakthroughs in my life was this, the realization of the pattern itself as a recurring thing. And it really, this shift in me in the past year, where I decided that I needed to leave the tradition, at least insofar as I was like on a monastic level of commitment, you know what I mean? Like vows, a changed name, like this much more strict regiment for my life. And it was Uranus squaring Venus in my chart ruler, navigator of the helm, so to speak, that prompted me to be like, what does it look like to have a, I don't know if spiritualized is the right word, but like, there's got to be something other than this dichotomy between spirit and matter that I keep ping-ponging back and forth between. And I just started to explore that very deeply in therapy, ironically, you know, in meditation, you know, in writing, in the way that I was creating content, you know, in what I was studying and reading. And I just started really, really trying to get into my own psychic relationship with that kind of spirit matter split. And I think that I suspect, I don't know if I'm right about this, but I suspect that a lot of people deal with that split. Because it's, on one level, it's very real. You know, it's everyone knows what it's like to smash your face into a pizza and to be like, to really regret it because you went too far. You know what I mean? And you're like, you feel bloated. Existentially, you can go through periods of time in your life where you are overindulging or going to an extreme, and with your desires, and you feel possessed and helpless, and you feel like you need to like do a 40-day juice cleanse. You know what I mean? And I just feel like whatever, and I'm using food, but you get, but it's just a metaphor. So anyway, so long story short, as Uranus has been working on natal Venus in my chart, my ascendant ruler, I started just asking myself, what does it look like to have a deep and intense, passionate, healthy relationship with Venus, as a metaphor, just as the archetype of the body, of pleasure, of desire, of the material world and its energies. What would it look like to transform my relationship with Venus? Because if I did that, maybe it would change some of the polarization that keeps appearing for me. You know what I mean? So there's a variety of things that I have done that have been super, super impactful. I would say number one has been that I have gotten really deeply immersed in weightlifting and I don't say bodybuilding, like I'm not that great at it or anything, but weightlifting, diet, nutrition, the science of the body, those things have become, I think I've tried to open up a relationship with those topics and I've really transformed my physical appearance. I mean, it's to me, it feels like I've transformed. Some people have commented on it or whatever. And, you know, I really try not to read too many of the, any kind of comment that's like commenting on me or that's really personal and not rooted in what we're talking about. I try to ignore because often they're really jerky comments, but yeah, I feel like I've tried to transform my physical, way of being in the world. For example, one of the things that was sort of like a precursor to me leaving this monastic tradition was growing my hair out. You're supposed to shave up. And I was like, I just can't do that. I don't like it. So, and I'm not going to repress that and somehow make up a story to myself that having hair is a distraction from spiritual life. I don't believe that's true. So it was little like kind of defiant things, but they were like, these little things are very Venus Uranus in the sense that it's like, how can I shift or reorient my relationship with Venus so that I'm not thinking Venus is like the temptress, do you know what I mean? And that there's, you know, some other archetype that's good, and Venusian things are sort of to be suspicious. I should be suspicious of Venus things. Now, this to me was really scary, and I'll tell you why it was really scary. If you're someone who has a history of like having a period of, I mean, it was a brief period of time in my life compared to what a lot of people deal with is about 2 years. But if you have a history in your life of going through addiction, then there's a way in which your own mind will be like, I can't trust myself to go toward things that give me pleasure. I can't trust myself, right? So a lot of this has also been about learning to trust Venus, which as my ascendant ruler is sort of like learning to trust myself, if that makes sense. I think that so many, what I'm hoping is that in this storytelling, everything that I'm saying is such an embodiment of that transit of Venus and Uranus. And so I hope that just in sharing some of those things, you know, it will carry over and make some sense to you. Now, you might be someone born with Venus and Uranus, you know, in some kind of dynamic, or maybe what I'm saying is like, dude, you know, you may have a totally different relationship to Venus and one that is like way healthier than mine has been. You know what I mean? And this, what is a big act, you know, moment of discovery for me is like, dude, I learned that when I was 18, you know, or whatever. So I don't mean to be suggesting that, you know, everyone needs to learn what I've been learning. But I think that what I've been learning and what I've been experiencing personally with this transit is super reflective of what Venus and Uranus is about. And there's lots more examples that I could give that are like, okay, so for example, this is a really personal story, but I shared with you guys earlier in the summer that I needed to get a new car. And I wanted to go electric, or I wanted to, you know, go to a hybrid or electric or something. And so I got a Jeep. You know, I can't tell you how difficult it was for me to pull the trigger on getting a Jeep, because to me it was like, well, okay, two things. One, it's like gaudy and you shouldn't get something like, you know, the thought of getting a car that to me, I'm like, I think is super awesome looking. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, that's superficial. That's, and you're going to go down a dark path. Like you'll start becoming an arrogant, shitty person. You know what I mean? And so don't go get that Jeep. The other thing was that my father, who, when he was the exact same age as I am right now, he got a Jeep. And when he got that Jeep, it coincided with him starting to have a serious series of mental health crises, a lot of which revolved around him spinning out and letting his desires completely hijack his life and his faith. And it was not a healthy dive into pleasure and like the material world, so to speak. So I also had this huge reservation, like, don't get a Jeep because, you know, when your dad did that, he totally fell off the wagon. And like, I'm not going to do that. Like, I don't want to repeat that. You know what I mean? I know that sounds so stupid. Like, it's just a vehicle. And I what a first world problem, you know? So I feel like an ass even talking about this. But I mean, I can't, but it's, for me, it was like just little things where, you know, that was a huge choice for me. And then realizing like, oh, I'm still a nice guy. I still have a spiritual practice. I'm not a dick just because I got a Jeep that I like. You know what I mean? And the color that I wanted was black. And here's an even stupider thing. I love the color black. And I like to wear black a lot more now than I have in the past couple of years. You might have noticed if you've watched my channel for a long time, I wear a lot more black now. Or I wear a baseball cap, or just little things like that, where I always thought like, oh, well, if you're spiritual, you can't wear a baseball cap on your channel because people will think you're just some stupid bro. Or you can't wear black because it's kind of like a heavy, dark color and like people will get the wrong impression, or stuff like that. You know what I mean? Such stupid things, you know? But it's been little thing like that. Like, no, I feel so free. And I love black. I love my black Jeep. I love wearing black t-shirts, blah, 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 blah. Oh, you shouldn't, you know, spend a lot of time in the gym, you know, because, you know, building muscle is like nothing compared to building credit in heaven, like this kind of thing. And what I've had to learn in every single instance is that I can love the color black, or I can build muscle in the gym or whatever and still be me. I can trust myself to love what I love. Do you know what I mean? So this is very Venus Uranus, where Uranus wants to help Venus with the work of liberating us from places where we feel stuck or bound, or where we don't trust ourselves and our to have a healthy relationship with desire, pleasure, beauty, etc. So even saying all of this for me is like, it's scary because it feels, it's just feels vulnerable. Anyway, so Venus is appearing as an evening star in Capricorn as she trines Uranus. That happens to be landing, in my ninth house. Right on top of the moon in Capricorn in my ninth house. Venus is making her appearance, trining Uranus, right over that moon in Capricorn. The moon in Capricorn that for me has been at times problematic when it comes to, you know, the distrust of the material world, the sense of like religious stoicism and a more austere kind of religious mode. Not all of which is bad. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't be who I am. I mean, you wouldn't have this channel if it weren't for, you know, 9 years of me, like, you know, getting up and doing my meditations and writing my talks and, you know, producing them. And so I feel like I love that moon too. It's given me a life of devotional commitment and practices and stuff like that, that have built the Nightlight School and, you know, so many other things that I feel good about. But it's also been austere and very oftentimes, I would say, the perpetrator in my chart of the polarization between spirit and matter that this year I have been working very hard to kind of deconstruct a little bit. And I have Venus and Uranus to thank for that. So I want to read you something that I wrote. And this was just like in a moment of inspiration. I was just feeling overwhelmingly thankful for this personal breakthrough, this feeling of being just freer in myself, no less spiritual, you know, but also less inhibited, no less loving of God, or no less committed to being a good person or to living a life that is, you know, balanced, finding some kind of middle path, but also far less inhibited, far less scared of, suspicious of, and in the, like a more messy relationship with Venus. You know what I mean? So I wrote this and I hope you guys will enjoy it. It's just something that I thought you guys that might also give you, this is a very Venus Uranus kind of poem that I wrote. And after I read it, I'm going to give you 5 radical ideas to entertain on behalf of Venus right now. So here's what I wrote. I called it a love song for Venus appearing as the evening star. I see you rising like a green flame in the sky of my dreams, the ruler of my helm, goddess navigator, rising like a green flame in the sky of my mind. How long have we said, rise above the illusions of this material world, jealous that you cannot be possessed, that you cannot be had? How long have we said, rise above the trappings of matter, angry that your love for your own glory pushes you past our worship? How long have we said, you can't trust that woman? And I see you rising like a green flame in the vault of the night, the mermaid of heavenly mountains, heavenly halls. How long have we said, don't trust what flashes and shimmers, frustrated that your beauty rises in our chests only to hide and disappear again? How long have we said, aim your eyes toward higher things, my son, and beware the body? But I see you rising like a green flame appearing in the bloody beating hearts of so many satellite souls. I want to know what your worshipers say, and I want to know what you say. What do you say is real? What do you say? In the seizures of your ecstasy, what do you say? Rising like a green flame in the temples of night, I hear you say, there is no spirit and there is no matter. There is no body and there is no heaven. There is no work, there is no healing. There is no transcending and there is no such thing as impermanence. There are no temporary pleasures, no flashes in the pan. Shut your mouth and put your lips on mine. There are no sacred texts, God-breathed scriptures, no hell and no afterlife. Turn off your mind and put your hips on mine. There is no death and there is no rebirth. There is no religion, no sacrilegion. Stop believing and start undressing your overdressed soul. There is no offensiveness and there is no sanctity. Sing until it hurts with your lips on my ears. There is only the infinite beat of this beautiful, awful, crushing heart. Take me into a private place and don't hold back. Do what you want and want what you do. There is only the rising and falling of insane attraction of crushing and soulful beauty. If you want to know me, consume me. If you want to taste me, let me consume you. I promise. The rest will all be there later, waiting in the sober morning. But when you wake, if you have taken me seriously, if you have taken me in my evening star body, then I will be wearing you as yet another jewel on my immaculate body, on my body, whom you have come to know, even if for only a moment. That is what I say. So I just kind of possessed by the Venus Uranus dynamic and so thankful for just the way that my relationship with Venus in my own psyche has shifted positively in the past year. Like, I can't say enough about how beautiful and liberating it's been to be going through a Uranus Venus transit. So to close today, I want to give you 5 radical ideas to entertain on behalf of Venus. And I hope that you guys will just have fun with this. So number one, the body is a transcendental reality. I think that what Uranus and Venus wants us to consider is to let go of the split between spirit and matter. That split exists as a kind of paradigm that we can definitely live in, but it's not a fun one to live in my experience. It's almost better to think about the reality of our bodies as transcendental objects. Like our bodies, just like the body of Venus in the poem, is a transcendental reality. And it's much better to think about the body as transcendental in and of itself than it is to think of the body as something different in contrast to the spirit. Now, I think you can do that while also understanding that at times in our lives, we will live with that split between spirit and matter. It is possible to enter into a state of consciousness in which there is such a split and in which we are tortured by it. It is also, in my humble opinion, especially in my experience with Venus and Uranus in the past year, possible for us to have a relationship with our bodily reality, with the earthly material energies, if we want to call them that, if that's even the right word, that is in itself transcendental, collapsing the distinction between spirit and matter. I think Venus invites us to consider that the body is transcendental. Two, that there is a sacred form of hedonism. Now, I want to read you something, which is the etymology of the word hedonism. Because when you hear that, you're going to go like, oh my God, he's gone off the deep end. You know, he's snorting coke in the bathrooms and the dance clubs of Minneapolis. He's gone bananas. No. So the Greek word means pleasure, enjoyment, and delight. Also, the etymology means sweet and pleasant. One who regards sweetness and pleasant things as the chief goal of life. And all I want us to consider as Venus appears as the evening star and trines Uranus is that there is a spiritual path that, let's call it a Venusian spiritual path. And I don't even know if that's the right phrase, but it considers the experience of pleasure and beauty in relation to this world and the very bodies that we are as the goal of life. That doesn't mean there aren't other goals that can't exist simultaneously. I'm learning more and more for me that these different kinds of spiritual activities with different kinds of values and end goals and assertions and so forth, we think they're competing against one another. Like, oh, well, hedonism, you know, like, oh, you can't be a hedonist and a spiritualist at the same time. I think that's boring. I think that is unimaginative and frankly unintelligent. I think that there is a sacred form of pleasure and beauty, and it can be one of the main goals of life, or the goal of life, if you want it to be. Why else would there be goddesses? Number three, gods represent spiritual psychologies. And what I mean by this is that I am coming to understand that my religious psychology, if it does not flow through my ascendant ruler, Venus, is not right for me. And I can't say a lot more than that because I feel like I'm still figuring out what that even means. But I just know that Venus is my DJ. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's just the truth. Like, Venus is my DJ. And it's okay to have different gods and different spiritual religious paradigms that are a part of our sojourn. You know, everything that I heard the voice of Venus saying in that poem to me was rhetorical, meaning there's a way in which Venus was like, look, if you want to experience me, you have to let go of some of these other things. It's okay to step into the temple of Venus and worship, because if you don't experience divinity through Venus, you're often going to be missing something. And that thing is often going to be the sensual, ecstatic, erotic dimension of reality, which is a bummer to miss out on. Number four, making love is transcendental. I think one of the things that got to me about the religious, the bhakti path that I was on, was the idea that every act of love in the material world, in this particular way of interpreting the Vedic Shastras and so forth, is seen as a kind of distorted reflection of real love in the heavenly realms. And it came to a point for me where theologically, people have asked me a lot, like, well, what were some of the theological differences that you had? Well, this was one of the main ones, because in that sense, although, you know, there were a lot of mixed teachings about how to deal with sex and marriage and chastity and, you know, celibacy and all that kind of stuff, there were a lot of debates about that. So there wasn't just one way of thinking about it. But one of the things that was said that I could not get down with was the idea that the love we experience here, the joy, the bliss, the things we love, and the love with which we create is not transcendental, that it is somehow purely material. That's a pretty extreme thing that I think a lot of you upon hearing would be like, I could never do that, right? Well, I didn't think I could either, but getting into a religious group and like, you kind of, a lot of the times, I think the reasons that you get into a religious community are for the structure and the stability that they provide psychically, which is not to be underestimated. It's not to be poo-pooed, as well as all the other positive things. Mantra meditation, so many things that made a huge impact on me in a very positive way. But what I came to realize was that it's just not true that love in this world, whether it's between lovers in like actually making love, or if it's an artist or any other kind of love in this world, is to call it mundane in contrast to something higher and spiritual, to me is once again unimaginative and unintelligent. But more than that, and more importantly than that, it is not congruent with what my deepest intuition and heartfelt truth tells me about what I've experienced. And so I think what Venus, the radical thing to consider on behalf of Venus, is that when you do things with love, devotion, complicated attachments, and so forth, that all of that is transcendental already. When you love, for example, this is such a bro-ish example, but like, I love my Minnesota Vikings. I just love them and I can't help it. And of course, it's a made up group of players from, you know, they're not even from Minnesota. You know, the team changes up. It's like, but it is a kind of fantasy, if you want to call it that, that I love. And that's complicated. Like, they can make me really mad or really sad or whatever. And the likelihood when I sign up at the beginning of a season that they're going to win the Super Bowl because of all of the teams and the chances and the odds are very slim. So I willingly suffer through something that's sort of, you know, it's a sort of bizarre fantasy to get into a sports team. I can't help it. And my point, and the thing that I've learned from Venus, is that it really doesn't matter what you love or even how you love in this world. It is the whole process and all the texture and layers of loving things and getting attached and going through the problems of attachment, but also the burning and the joy of all of it. All of that is transcendental. And if you stick with that path, you will learn, you will grow, your life will be soulful. And it is a valid spiritual path to be deeply in love with things in this world, in your body. And so to me, I owe Uranus Venus a thank you for helping me recognize that is true and real. So that makes sense. Number five, reality is art, and art is often iconoclastic. This is such a stupid thing. I used to get really offended when I would listen to John Lennon's Imagine. Isn't that stupid? Like, it's such a beautiful song. And I would get offended because he would say, imagine there's no heaven, no hell below us. You guys know that line, right? It wasn't until Uranus started squaring my natal Venus that I was like, oh, yeah, that's freaking beautiful. Like, because I was going through a period of time where one of the most iconoclastic things that I could possibly imagine myself thinking or entertaining is that I should not be thinking about, you know, my karmic trajectory, the afterlife, the reality of my eternal soul and where it's going, and the reality of different layers and levels of heaven and hell, and like just like all of this stuff. I no longer hear John Lennon saying that there isn't heaven or isn't hell. I hear him saying, imagine if there isn't. And one of the things that I think, if you really get into Venus Uranus, or even just Venus on her own, that you have to life is from Venus's standpoint, and I'm not saying Venus's standpoint is the only standpoint we should consider, but from Venus's standpoint, reality is a process of making love and making art. That is what reality is when you're in the throes of Venusian ecstasy. And it's a place we ought to visit. It's a temple you gotta like take a pilgrimage to. And for some of us more regularly than others, probably depending on how Venus is configured in your chart. And if you take the worship of Venus seriously, you're going to have to smash some sacred objects. It's just like, it's true. Okay, let me just give you an example. So when I went to get my black Jeep, which again, I know it's just so stupid, but when I went to get that black Jeep, right before I went to get it, I was intensely nervous about getting it, like butterflies. And I was like, oh, I don't know. This feels wrong. Or like, maybe I shouldn't. So there's like a statue, I knocked it off the counter accidentally and it broke. And immediately I was like, oh, Venus Uranus. That's Venus Uranus, right? Because I was going through the transit at the time and I was like, that's Venus Uranus. And it was this really simple insight. When you love what you love deeply and you just let yourself go into the current of that, there's something that sometimes it's going to be sort of iconoclastic, but you can't learn and grow and receive the gifts that Venus has to give in her temple unless at times you're willing to let certain powerful objects like break or fall off the shelf or take a back seat. So for example, when I was reading that poem and I talked about Venus saying, you know, what do you say? And Venus says, there's no spirit, there's no matter, there's no body, there's no heaven, there's no work, there's no healing. To me, those are like intensely iconoclastic statements at different portions of my life. And maybe hearing them for you, it was too. I don't think the point is that, as Venus says there toward the end, like they'll be there again in the sober morning. But it's like God wants us to know, and come to know ourselves, and God wants to know itself through a Venusian experience. And when you're in a Venusian experience, at times you have to just throw your wine glass into the fireplace. you have to see the glass break. You have to see other sacred things kind of shattered. It is not surprising to me at all that Uranus, Venus will often coincide in my clients' lives with affairs. Thankfully, I feel like my wife and I have an exceptionally great relationship. Like, and it's not perfect, but like I am so happy and I feel so fortunate to have someone that is like a really good friend, someone I really admire, someone I'm insanely attracted to, and so forth. I feel like for people whose version of repression of my Venus Uranus has been a lot about religious psychology and personal psychology. But for a lot of people, like if you have Venus in the seventh house and you get a Uranus transit, you will see so many people where if their sex life is like pent up, or if they're something about their relationships is pent up, then Uranus, Venus will come along and it will be like, you'll fall in love with, you know, the mailman. I don't know. you'll fall in love with something that's feels like it is going to smash all of the ironclad, you know, like the statues of commitment that adorn your life. That's a very real thing. I'm not condoning at all that people ought to act one way or another, you know, with regard to that kind of thing. I mean, most of the time I find that if a person is able to look at that impulse and then be real with their spouse about what they're feeling and thinking about, things can change really positively, actually. And that liberation can actually come through your relationship rather than it, you know, that impulse seeking its expression in something that may destroy your family or, you know, whatever. But the point is that if reality is art, or if there's a way of entering into reality that is artistic, you have to be ready for the fact that art, in order for it to be good, will sometimes offend. It will sometimes be iconoclastic, which is why, in my humble opinion, and I barely ever say anything political, I am very, although I don't even know if I want to say this. Basically, I really shudder when people try to censor art, you know, and there's been some of that happening. And I understand there's always a line, but like that's a Venus Uranus dynamic, censorship of art and the desire to reject any kind of limitation around artistic or sexual expression and so forth. Anyway, you can think about that on your own. As someone who went to school for art and you know, I feel like Venus needs to be free, you know? So anyway, well, that's what I've got for today. Kind of a provocative Venus Uranus talk. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Get something good out of it. If you have any comments to share, it's always helpful to hear what you guys have to say, and it helps the algorithm and all that good stuff. Don't forget, we're trying to raise the support of 1,608 backers for the Kickstarter. We, as of the time I'm making this, are at a little over 700 backers. So we still need about 900 left to go. We could really use your help. You can find the link in the description of this video or the comments section. When you go there and donate, you can choose a reward. There's lots of readings for the year ahead, exclusive talks that I give, 50% off to 75% off bundles of my online classes. So check it out. Hope you guys are having a good week, and we will see you again tomorrow. Bye, everyone.